Welcome to the Brad and Body Podcast. You already know who we are. We wouldn't be here, so let's not waste any more time. Here's Bradley.
Well, it's hello, everyone, to the Brad and Body Podcast. What a week. Body, you called it. You said it was not going to go to game four. It didn't. Melbourne United, second championship. Hello, mate. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. But yeah, if you're going to beat them twice in Perth, you're not going to lose at home. That was, you know, not really a huge call on my part. But I did make another call to our guest today, and he's graciously agreed to come on. So, Brad, I'll let you do the intros.
I will, and we have got a beauty. Where are they now? Continuing on from Dean Utoff last week, which had some great feedback, and thank you, everyone. Well, this one, he is a beauty. He is a former, obviously, a professional basketball player, and if I'm not mistaken, he started his career in Cairns as a development player, and then he moved over to college playing for Metro State under the great Mike Dunlap, like a lot of players have. He then had an established career with the Sydney Kings, winning NBL Rookie of the Year, South Dragons, where he was won an NBL championship. He then signed with Melbourne Tigers. He went to the Gold Coast Blaze, and he obviously ended up in Cairns, where it all started. I am talking to none other than our great mate, Mark Worthington. How are you, mate?
I'm good, fellas, and thanks for having me.
Well, it's a pleasure, and I'm curious, as an MVP of the Melbourne United club when it was first getting started in the changeover from Tigers to United, were you thrilled for them to win the championship? Were you ambivalent? Did you watch it? What was your reaction last week as that all played out?
Well, I was at game two. I sat there, and thanks to the great people of La Trobe Financial, who also employ me now. But it was nice to go back to the game. And it's hard to say. I mean, Brad sort of just ran down all the clubs that I've played for. Some are here, some are not here anymore.
Yep.
And for me, I guess I don't necessarily have a team anymore. I'm happy for individuals. I was happy for Dave Anderson to get another championship.
Yeah.
I was happy for Chris Goulding, the way that he played in that series as well. Happy for David Barlow, really happy for him. And then on the other hand, look, I was a little bit disappointed for Perth, which I'd never thought I'd say. But
yeah, me neither.
We as a comp, we were probably robbed of seeing something great, seeing Melbourne trying to stop Bryce Cotton.
Can I just get you to say that again for all our Perth listeners? Could you just say that again, please, Werdo?
I've got a great relationship with the Perth crowd now.
I'm a WA boy.
But I think we've all sort of known it since Bryce's come into the league. He's been the difference, and no one has been able to stop him so far.
Yeah.
And even though Melbourne United win the championship this year, I'm suspecting that Melbourne, while happy that they won a championship, they sort of want to know if they could knock off Bryce Cotton as well. Because there's no way that it's a sweep, I can tell you that. And you've got to really admire the way that the Wildcats went about their business in that three-game series. By no means were they pushovers. They played unbelievably well as a team. They got people to step up. They've had people playing through injuries. I thought it was just a great effort by the team, by the Perth Wildcats. And I think for probably myself, like many others who have probably hated the Perth Wildcats for so many years, you can't say anything, but that is just a damn good program.
Yes.
And
and
that system is what wins them, makes them a winning team time and time again. And obviously Bryce Cotton just puts them over the top every single time. So.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. I think outside of Perth, most people would have been happy to see them lose. But then the way the thing played out and because of the injuries, I think they won a lot more respect and admiration from the non-committed basketball fan than they've ever had before, than they've had for their 10 championships or whatever. I think they really, like what Mitch Norton was doing out there, that sort of stuff. If you can't admire that, well, then you don't really like sport. It's as simple as that. And when I look back, that Perth did win the NBL Cup, when everybody had their full strength teams, it was in Perth that won the NBL Cup. I think this may well have gone differently had both teams been able to put their very best foot forward. Now that also includes Jack White too in United's case. So, yeah, it was a very interesting series in terms of how you felt about it.
Oh, absolutely, and you bring up a good point about Jack White. He would have been right up there for Defensive Player of the Year discussion in his rookie year had he been able to stay on board. His ability to protect the rim, stay in front of his player, guard him one-on-one. You know, we haven't seen that from an incoming rookie in a long, long time. And he was sort of anchoring that United defense, especially early in the piece when they were probably struggling to find their rhythm offensively. I really liked what he brought on the defensive end. Jesus, I'm sounding like a coach. I should stop this. It was good. It was a good game, wasn't it?
That actually leads me to my next question. It was a two-part question because you were talking about Perth. The first thing I want to ask you, were you ever offered a contract to go to Perth, being that that's where you originated from? And then I actually wanted to ask you, had you had any thoughts about going into coaching? So let's go with question one first.
Well, question one is, I got offered by Perth a couple of times. Alan Black wanted me first, but wanted me to come on as a train-on player, zero money. At that stage, just wasn't an option, and quite frankly, I wasn't ready. Got offered when I first came out of college. I believe Mike Ellis was the coach then. It could have been Scotty Fisher. But I got offered again, got offered a roster spot. Didn't happen because the Sydney Kings and their three championships had come in and pretty much said that they thought I was a starter, and that's what the way that the season was going to start. Whereas Perth had said that I was a roster player, but on the back end in Cairns had said that I wasn't good enough for the NBL in my first year, and they didn't offer me at all. It came through the season, the year that I went to the Dragons, I got offered by Perth, and I thought the Dragons were onto something. Obviously, they'd grabbed Gorge, and I'd had a relationship with him, and I really wanted to continue that relationship going forward. I didn't know at the stage, but that Dragons championship was be the last time I was coached by Gorge. And then later on, once I came back from Serbia, Rob Beveridge was still coaching, and we were in contact, and we'd actually agreed verbally, and then Bevo got fired. So it didn't end up happening. Trevor came in. He wanted to keep Sean Redditch, which is fair enough. You don't want to probably rock the apple cart. But I was going to come to Perth, and Sean was probably on his way out by signing me. So, yeah, there were a few opportunities that had come, and none ever eventuated. As far as coaching goes, I coach NBL 1 West now. I live in Perth, but I coach my home team of the Southwest Slammers, which is about 2 hours south of Perth. And I've got a very young team that we're going through a rebuilding phase, and I'm enjoying the challenge. It's been a year and a half in, and it's quite enjoyable.
Am I right in saying that your dad coached that and your brother played there?
Correct. And my mum played and coached, and my sister played.
Wow. So, what a family affair.
Mum and Dad have been on the board. We've done the whole lot with the Slammers. And it was probably my first introduction into basketball was remember watching the Slammers as a young kid. It was always a club that I supported as a young kid growing up. I think I played my 50-odd games for the Slammers starting at the age of 16. And then all these years later, I get to come back to WA and get to coach this club now. And I kind of walked in, and they'd had zero wins the year before. They were getting kids from Perth that couldn't get a game coming down for a year and just making the numbers in the competition. And I sort of said to the club, well, we can do this the right way or the wrong way. Let's blood some local talent. Let's get them to about 50 to 70 games and then add people from there. And we're sort of in that process now. And I think at one stage our average age was about 19 years of age of these young kids that were struggling to get any look in with the NBL 1 program. And, we've got two wins on the board. We went down by 2 points to the league leaders on the weekend on Friday night. And I think, the future of the club is going to look a lot healthier in a couple of years' time.
Yeah, well, I mean, from what you've just told us about your family, I mean, it's kind of inevitable that you would get into basketball, obviously. I mean, now coaching is the next step. But so is that how you got into it? Because your father was into it? Now I'm going to quickly age myself and just let Brad know that
yeah,
I played.
Yeah, go ahead, mate. Just get it over with, buddy. I know where this is going.
I know you know, but I played against Mark's dad when he was playing for Western Australia. I was playing for South Australia at the Australian Under 20 Championships back in back then. So, but getting back to the point, you really didn't have much chance to play anything else, did you? If your whole
family. Can I just ask though, was your dad 14 then when he was playing against Boddy?
Mate, you're off Brent. Jesus. Yeah. Tell us about how you were gorgeous assistant, will you? You haven't said that for nearly a week.
Boddy would know that Dad was a very decent and handy player. Yep. He was as solid as they came. Probably nothing too flashy. Was a fantastic shooter, and he would remind me that as a junior, all the way growing up, that he could kick my ass shooting, and most of the times he did. He was very handy, but it probably wasn't so much Dad that got me into basketball. It was actually my mum. Now my mum, she would tell you that she had zero talent to basketball, but she played with a humongous heart. The way that she went about it, and she was that scrappy player, and I probably got a mixture of both, but it was probably being around my mum more as she was playing basketball. Me, as a young kid, even playing against the women's teams that she'd played for in trainings and all that. So I've probably got a lot more out of mum's journey than what I did actually dad's, because by the time I was into basketball, Dad was done and dusted and he was working, and you know, I didn't get to see him play as much as what I got to see my mum, and she just, you know, she was very much a see ball, get ball sort of player.
Right.
And I guess people that watch me play sort of probably saw a lot of the same attributes.
Yes,
of diving on the ball and doing anything to sort of win the game, and probably attribute that to the way that I watched my mum play the game growing up.
Yeah, I saw you win enough games in Adelaide for visiting teams. So let's not talk about that. Let's talk about how you got to college. How did college come about? Like, where did that fit into it? Someone recruit you at a national championships, or was that something you always wanted to do?
Well, there was a guy called Charles Ryan that used to go to all the junior championships, and Charles was just on the pulse as far as junior basketballers, and he had a relationship with Mike Dunlap, and after doing a few nationals, I got overlooked by the AOS. Well, AOS decided that I wasn't what they wanted, which was fine at the time, and I'd got a phone call to go to Cairns and go train with Guy Malloy and John Dorge. Which I, coming out of high school, I thought that was a fantastic opportunity, and not in my wildest dreams do I think I'd have an opportunity to go and train, which was a great learning curve, because one day I'd be on Aaron Trahair, and the next day I'd be on Anthony Stewart, and the next day I'd be on Ben Knight. And they always challenged me, you know, as an 18-year-old, to try and, well, 17-year-old, to try and get better. From there, I got a phone call probably about a month into my training with the Taipans, and it was Mike Dunlap asking if I'd ever thought about going to college. To my response was, no, never thought about it in my life.
Right.
And he said, would it be something that you'd be interested in? And I just said, sure. And that was pretty much it. That was the conversation. They didn't have to tell me much. I didn't have any other teams going for me at that stage. About 5-6 months later, I'd boarded a plane on my way to America to start a college career.
What was that experience like, Mike? Because you get quite diverse sort of stories. Some people come back and college was the greatest thing they ever experienced. Some don't even continue playing basketball after they come back. And then there are others that come back with horror stories about, you know, the way the coaches treat the players and racism and people having guns and just the whole American culture. You get the other side of it as well. So what was your personal experience like?
Well, I agree with what you said. College isn't for everyone. America as a system as a whole, and you can see this in sport, you can see this in the coaching ranks, you've got to pay your dues before you're given any respect or can move up the chain. And doing 4 years of college is very, very similar. I walked in there and I didn't know my left foot from my right foot. I was sparingly used as a freshman, and it's confronting. You know, I'm this country kid from Bunbury. It's all of a sudden living on the other side of the world. 9/11 happened on my first year in college as well, which was a little bit scary, probably more so for mum and dad than it was for me. And then you sort of build yourself up throughout the years. Even after my third year, there was no guarantee that I was going to be a good basketball player after year three. But then my senior year, it all just clicked for me.
Right.
And you would know, as I know, I had one of the really good college coaches in Mike Dunlap. And I say good in the term of he always remembered what I was trying to get back to, and that's to become a professional. And yeah, you go to college, of course you want to have a bit of fun as well. And, you know, you're leaving home and it's a bit of an eye-opening experience. But Dunlap always made it about, like, you've got to do this because this is what a pro does. And I think for people like myself, Kane Oakley, Luke Kendall, and the list goes on of Australians that went to Metro State, I think we really got the upper hand from going from basically no one's in the Australian system to, oh, these guys can actually play, because we'd already had 4 years of actually training like a pro before we got to the NBL.
Can I ask, Werdo, and I'm just loving hearing this, the insight is great. The fact that you went to the Kings, because that now where you've obviously finished your career, you've come, a college career, you've come back to the Kings. Was there any relationship with Dunlap and Gorge that they know they're quite close, or was that you just wanted to go to Sydney because of that winning environment? What made you come there?
Well, the Gorge and Dunlap do have a very close relationship. And even though Dunlap didn't really persuade me to go to Sydney, it was very clear cut in my mind once the offers came across the table. The first thing I did was Charles Ryan, who was the one that got me over to Metro, he became my agent. I was the only person that he looked after when I first came back. And I said to Charles, Cairns had done the right thing by me before I'd left. Gauge what Cairns' interest in was in me, because I feel like I should repay the favour of going to Cairns first, because they had already invested in me. And to, like I said earlier, Cairns said, well, they didn't think I was an NBL player, which I was like, that's fine. Their decision, all good. Perth had put an offer on the table, and Sydney had put an offer on the table, both similar. But then it came down to, well, Sydney thought I was a starter. Perth thought I was probably the 10th man. And Sydney were coming off three championships. Now, to me, I think I'm a pretty smart person, but I didn't have to be a smart person in that point to realise that I was more valued at Sydney.
Yeah.
A team that just won three championships that obviously know what they're doing as a club and an organisation, for me to choose to go to Sydney. And so it became very clear-cut, regardless of what Gorgon and Dunlap's relationship was. It was like the national team coach wants me on his team as a starter. That's where I should be.
That's
a great point. And I want to start to go onto that national team, because you obviously have been a very, very good player for the Australian team. I know you joined in 2005, if I'm not mistaken, and that was the FIBA Oceania Championship, but you've been to two Olympics, Beijing and London. Am I right in saying gold medal in the 2006 Commonwealth Games?
I've
got a photo of Wertho running around holding the medal up, and CJ Bruton's running and Brad Newley. It's a good group, actually. Brilliant. God, sorry.
And can I just start, what was that like? The, you know, obviously number one putting on that Australian singlet, number two Olympics. Amazing.
Yeah. Well, people used to say that I used to grow a foot when I put the green and gold on. And
yeah.
It was just something. It was never about the name on the back of the singlet for me. Like, there was just the ultimate pride. It didn't matter if we were playing a practice game in China or wherever it was that were, or the Olympics. I never took it for granted. It was an absolute privilege to play for Australia. And I sort of, I don't know what it was, because I was never the star for the Boomers. I was always the battler, you know, that used to just do all the dirty stuff. And, you know, if you're a star, you're always going to get another opportunity to play when you're in my position. I never knew when that was the last time I would be able to put on a jersey. I remember the last time I put on a jersey, which was in a practice game leading up to the 2014 World Champs, because it was on my birthday. It was the last time I ever played for Australia. And to me, for how many games that was just an incredible ride with an incredible group of men that I got to play with, incredible coaches that I got to play for. And just the most special moment was any time that I got to play for Australia.
Well, you know, we've had this conversation before, you and I, about the fact that I used to liken you to Andrew Vlahov, the great Western Australian power forward who played for Australia from 88 through to 2000. And I feel you were very much in the same category of player. Like Andrew, he would be a meat and potatoes guy going in, doing the screens, the rebounds, the scrapping work, the sort of stuff that you did. And I never thought for a second that that he might, you know, be thinking that he's not a chance for selection, which obviously did kind of bother you by the sounds of what you said, because I would have thought you was in those teams in that era when you were at your best. I would have thought you were getting selected for Australia was just about a given, because you know, every team needs those sorts of players. I'm not even sure who we have in the current group that play that way. And I think that's going to be a problem.
Oh, that's easy for me. Nick Kay is the current player that plays
that
way.
Yeah, that's a good one.
But, yeah, and we have had this conversation before, to be even mentioned with Vlahov is, you know, he was my childhood hero growing up. He was the guy that presented me my Olympic jersey. For the first time, everything. I used to remember watching Wildcats games and going out and even trying to mimic his shooting style at one stage, which was a terrible idea to do that. But I held Andrew in the highest regard. And
yep.
One of the cool things, once I announced my retirement, is within the first three messages that I got on my phone post my retirement, one was from Vlahov and one was from Luke Longley. Now, if you've got two better Western Australians to give you a message, I couldn't ask for a better way to open up the phone and see those two of the first three people that messaged me. It was unbelievable.
Brilliant. Great. Brilliant.
Well, I want to ask you, we were talking off air just before we started and it was very intriguing. Can you just, where are you right now and what are you doing?
Well, I do live in Perth, but I am currently escaping COVID in WA, and I'm in Queensland at my youngest son's under 12 state tournament as he represents Cairns, and I've got mine and my son's under 14 tournament in Toowoomba in a couple of days. So watching the younger generation run around, and it's I love playing, but I think I enjoy watching my kids play a lot more.
Yeah. Oh, mate, well, I was supposed to take my son to Melbourne a week and a bit ago to go into the under-12s as well, but unfortunately we couldn't because we're in lockdown. But I believe there's a bit of a who's up there at the moment. There's some names that you've mentioned that are some who've got some sons coming through. Is that right?
Yeah, it's quite enjoyable. Run into my old teammate, Mika Vakona, today. It was such a blast seeing him again. And his son running around. There's Scotty McGregor and his son. Scotty McGregor's son's got a loaf of bread for a head, just like his old man. it is like a who's who of ex-NBL players. Now, I think majority of the parents have got no idea who we are, which is totally fine. Yeah. But it is cool going to these tournaments and, you know, seeing all these parents that, you know, used to play with or used to play against and sort of getting to catch up briefly and checking out their sons and seeing what they're doing. And, I mean, if I know anything, I'm looking at this Queensland group in a couple of years' time as they go through the national champs. I reckon they'll be all right with a few of the names coming through.
Well, that's great, mate. This time of the pod, what we do is we throw some names at you, and we love doing this, and we're just looking for like one word, one sentence answers, just the first thing that pops in your mind, just with some names. So I'm going to start it off with, and I'll throw out the great Brian Gorgian.
Goat.
Nice. Good one.
Chris Anstey.
Hello, everyone. I'll have to let my,
I'll just say best mate, but Boddy will know this. Boddy just did an article about Chris's new book, what the whiteboard? What was it? Tall Tales.
Yeah,
I started reading that book and I put it down because I've heard every story a billion times over already. Because Chris is one of my great mates that I drink with, and if I have to hear every time or watch another fourth quarter of him versus the Chicago Bulls ever again, I will do my own head in. I swear to God. But Chris, I said best mate, but. Yeah, Chris, I'd say legend because in my eyes, he is an absolute legend of a human being, a legend of a basketball player, a legend of the basketball community, and I'm glad I can call him one of my best mates.
You know what I love about that? You're probably one of only a very few people that can actually say that about him, and it's actually cool. So I love that.
I actually said in my review of Tall Tales that these stories will be interesting to everybody other than Mark Worthington.
And it's so true because I've heard it all. Like I was like, oh, this is chapter one. Jesus, how much more crap do I have to read that I haven't heard before?
I'm going to throw another name at you. Joe Ingles.
Hilarious.
Okay. Well, I don't think we're going to get the same response for this one. Mike Dunlap.
X's and O's genius.
Wow, nice. Well, I'm going to throw someone else at you that have a lot to do with it. Joey Wright.
Best word to describe Joey. Humble.
Okay.
Humble. Joey has this outside persona that probably doesn't match up to who he is in real life, and he is one of the most humble human beings I've met, and I'd say giving, that's my word for Joey, giving, because he was always giving of his time, his expertise, his everything. He gave so much to the players that he coached.
Very nice. I got one more for you. David Barlow.
Oh, flexible.
Okay.
That guy just stretches the entire time. And I've never met a more flexible person in all my life.
Mate, I'm with you. I remember I coached him in 2004 or 2005, and I remember every time I'd sub him out in those first few games, he'd be at the end of the bench, and just he would never sit down, never. And I looked at him and he came up to me, he says, don't worry about me, you'll just see me at the end of the bench stretching whenever I'm not playing. It's just like, he does, and he still does it to this day.
Oh, yeah. Mm. No, I know his partner, his wife, Tiwi, will wake up in the middle of the night and he's by the side of the bed stretching his hip flexors and she's like, just go to sleep. He's like, oh, he was incredible how much that guy stretched.
Okay.
Mate, we could...
Wait a second, wait. You're going to throw all those names out at me and you're not going to throw out the one name that I was banking that you were going to throw out to me.
Well, Aaron Fern?
No. Sean Redditch. Surely. That was the one name that I was waiting for.
Oh, look, we crossed it off because we thought it's going to run us over time, but go on, give us Sean Redditch.
He's a winner. I'll say that about him. He knew how to win and he did that time and time again. So I was waiting. You're waiting for something controversial. It wasn't going to happen.
That bloke
was a winner.
I was just looking at all the questions that I haven't asked you, and one of those was about your toughest opponents, and so I'm figuring by that response, Sean would be among them.
He'd be among them, but the toughest opponent of all time was Mika Vekona and Chris Anstey. Those two together. For different reasons, and they'll both agree with this, Mika was as tough as nails, and... He just couldn't budge him mentally. Chris was his basketball IQ was so much higher than people give it credit for. And he had the ability to punish you every which way on the court. And he was definitely the most dominant big in the NBL history, I'd say, for his versatility and what he could do.
I'm going to throw one more at here, because one of the questions I had is it was very well known, and this is what it looked like, and I want to come to you and ask. You and Sean Redditch didn't like each other. That's what it looks like, right, from an outsider in. And those games you had, you know, there was so much physicalness. Can I ask, did that come to a personality thing? Did it just one of those guys you wanted to go at, or was it the fact that you were a Perth boy and that was a spot that could have been you and you wanted to play there? Why was it like that?
Oh, I think it was just two guys butting heads on the court. I don't think it was anything more than that. We were probably polar opposites in our personalities and the way that we go about our business. Sean probably had less time for others, where I was more about bringing people together and wanting to have a beer with them. He wasn't a drinker as well. Probably the sign of the times, you know, where it's a lot different these days, but we were just polar opposites. Funnily enough, a lot of people thought that Chris and I hated each other. And we did for the first couple of years. I couldn't stand that big bastard.
I still can't.
But that was because he was so goddamn good at what he did. And it wasn't until we were on the Australian team together that we figured out that we were probably a lot more similar than what we thought we were. And that was just time spent together away. And probably the funniest story that I could ever tell you about my basketball time is he's captain of the Melbourne Tigers. I'm captain of the South Dragons. We used to live 200 metres down the road from each other. And before the grand final series, we said, well, let's just pop around to our local little pub in the back of Port Melbourne. Let's have a Palmer, a beer, because we're probably not going to see each other besides on the court for the next, you know, 10 days. So we go to the pub. We're sitting down. I've gone to the bathroom. Chris has grabbed a tomato sauce bottle and he's written Tigers in me Palmer before I could get back. And anyway, I come back and there's this guy talking to Chris. And I just walk up behind him and this guy's going, I hope you smash Worthington. He's a prick. I don't like him. If I saw him, I would belt the absolute living crap out of him. I hope you get a chance just to put an elbow through his face. And Chris is just going, mm-hmm. And he's like looking at me and having a bit of a smile and a chuckle. And Chris goes, instead of me doing it, I'll do you one better, mate. Why don't you tell him yourself? And he goes, oh, I would if I could see him. And so I said, yeah, how you doing, mate? And he's looked at me, and you'd never seen someone's face just drop, and his heart and his soul had gone down to the floor. And he goes, brilliant. Oh, no, I was just joking, mate. And I was like, no, nah, it's all right, mate. If you want to have a swing, you can try. And he goes, oh, no, no, never. I was just, you know, I've had a couple of beers, and I don't want... I was just trying to rev Chris up, and I was like, yeah, no worries, mate. You know, piss off, be on your way so we can have our beer and enjoy ourselves. And he goes, by the way, I think this is awesome that you two are doing this. I was like, yeah, no worries, mate.
Great story. Were though, we could go on forever, and you are an absolute champion. I do say this every week, mate, because we try and keep, you know, our show short and sharp. We'd love to have you back. We still have got a lot of stuff.
I've got another 6 questions.
Yeah, exactly. There's more things about you playing in the NBL. We'd love to get your thoughts about this time of the league, the Boomers, the whole thing coming up. So, mate, number one, we'd love to have you back. Number two, we can't thank you enough for coming on our show. We really appreciate it.
Love to come back, fellas, and thanks for having me.
Well, that was great, Boddy. I enjoyed that. It's just interesting to hear, you know, where are they now? You've, you know, gone from a Dean Utoff that was, you know, 20-odd years ago when he retired compared to Wurtho a lot less. I enjoyed that.
Yes, me too. And I like the fact that he didn't want to rock the apple cart. I thought you rocked the boat and you upset the apple cart, but he didn't want to rock the apple cart. That's a fine effort on Wurtho's part.
Well, mate, we've already chatted. Obviously, United secure the NBL championship. Yep. They did it at home. Look, no shock there, but, geez, they were tough, man, weren't they? They were real good. And you know what? I want to give you kudos for what you said last week. We can't keep sitting here talking how good were Perth and weren't they great. Melbourne United.
Melbourne won it. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's as simple as that. Yeah, and I think all due credit to them, they were the pre-season probably unbackable favourites at the beginning, you know. But Jack White, losing Jack White hurt them. That really did. But they recovered, and, yeah, they won.
Isn't that a scary sign? They're going to have him back next year. Wow.
Yep. Yep.
Well, actually, speaking of next year, let's talk about a few signings. Interesting one, Brian Brockhoff, who's pulled out of the Boomers for mental health reasons and hopefully – you know, he comes good. Well, he signed a 2-year deal, so that's nice to hear him back there. Yes. Chase Buford is the new coach of the Sydney Kings in a multi-year deal with no out clause is what I heard, which is very interesting. Jarrell Martin returns to Sydney.
That's a good signing.
I'll be interested to see how that goes because, let's be honest, like offensively he's great. Defensively, that's, you know, where it's been. But I do love the fact that they're bringing Jordan Hunter back and he's re-signed. So that's a nice little nest egg for them. And Leatha signs for Southeast Melbourne as well. What do you think of all these?
I think, obviously, Jarrell Martin's defence, he shouldn't have been taking lessons from Daniel Kickett. That was his mistake. Okay, so with Dan having retired, I think we'll see some more defence out of him. With Brokoff, I think he was a major disappointment, to be honest. Mm. I'm a huge fan of his, so I'm coming from a position of love, not of just, you know, hating on the guy, but I expected so much more from him, forgetting that he hadn't actually played for quite a long time. But he never really got there. He never really showed us anything. He had one real sort of outstanding game of the nature that you'd expect him to play every second week. So, I think it's probably a good thing he's sticking around. He's going to settle his family down. And maybe we'll see the best of him. As I was having a conversation with someone else last week, I said if he hadn't come back to play for Phoenix and I hadn't seen him since Dallas Mavericks and his reputation, his history, I would have said definitely in the 12 to Tokyo, no question. Yeah. But having seen him, he's withdrawn, fine, but he wouldn't have made my team.
Yeah, no, not with – and that's where, you know, like – you know, I'm a big believer in the mental health. I think there's a huge issue out there with what's going on in the world. And I, based on the fact that he's pulled out for those reasons, I have no doubt that's what the whole season's been about with him. That's my opinion. Yeah. I'm not saying I'm right. And so based when I heard those opinion, I in the back of my mind, geez, I'm glad he signed for 2 more years. Let's see that guy that made the NBA. Because we didn't see him.
Let's see him again.
Yeah, I like that. But I am interested to see where a lot of players are going to go because there's a lot of those fringe players that were talked about for, Tasmania, I should say. Yeah. But, you know, Kyle Adnam, Leatha, even Bash from New Zealand, these guys, they've all re-signed. So, and Tasmania have not announced anyone yet and that team's coming in. So I know they'll want to announce a big one.
Now, Brad, yeah, I know they do, but I think Adam Gibson would be probably a big surprise if he didn't go there, being a Tasmanian. A good place for him to finish as a veteran. Nice sort of, you know, closure for his career. But I want to ask you, because I know if you cut one arm, you bleed yellow and the other one purple. So being a Kings man through and through, this Chase Buford signing, what's your take on that? And I'm come from a position where I think American coaches that come in cold – have a lot of trouble first adjusting to the way the game's played here and the culture here. I think it takes them a year before they even know what they're doing.
I completely agree. And first off, the first thing I heard was, oh, that worries me. I'm going to be completely honest. It's like, you know, but I'm really worried. This is an American coach that's come in. Like what you said, it is a completely different game over there. I don't know why. I wasn't part of that program. I never went to America and play over there. And it just seems that, you know, American coaches, they have trouble with man management here. Now, I'm not talking, you know, like I'm not talking a Gorge and, you know, these guys and Scott.
No, they lived here. They're Australians. They've become us. They know our culture. Bruce Palmer, all those guys, they know our deal. But these guys... you know, Will Weaver's that sort of bob up. I don't know.
Yeah, but then you look at a Will Weaver, well, you had Bogut, you had Lish, you had, you know, these players that were just, you know, they make your team. So, look, I have looked at him and, geez, he seems like a good coach. He seems like a very good coach. I like the fact that it's a multi-year deal and that he's got no out clause, but still in the back of mind, you still start to think to yourself, but hang on, if he gets an offer in a year's time, is he gone? I would have preferred, and I'm going to be completely honest, I would have preferred to see a Sean Dennis or a Rob Beveridge or a coach of that nature taking the team. That's my
This ownership's too smart for us, Brad. Now give me your Rosen Rattler for this
week. Can I also add, I wouldn't have been upset if I saw Joey Wright there either, but I'll just throw it. My Rosen Rattler is absolutely no disrespect to anyone on the judging panel or anyone, and Jock Landale himself, because I thought he was outstanding. But I was actually shocked that Golding didn't get that MVP either in the grand final series. The reason I'm saying that is every dagger shot that was needed came from that. And I just thought he set the tone, even in that game three, bang, bang, bang. You know, I just thought, I was a bit shocked, but that's no disrespect to Jock Landale.
He was very solid, and I don't think we can quibble about that. But I agree with you. I'm shocked that when a guy comes out and hits 3 3-pointers with his first 3 shot attempts in the first 5 minutes of a game and really puts the other team on its heels, which is exactly what Chris did, to sit him down makes no sense to me. It just doesn't make sense. You go to that well till it dries up. You don't sit him down. And so he comes back in. He's cold. He misses the next, I don't know, 7 or 8 shots. But then again, there it was in the last quarter when Perth is making its run, and hats off to him for being able to do that. Who hits the big shot? It's Chris Golding yet again. Hits the big shot, breaks their back. And so even just, I agree with you. I thought he was the Larry Sengstock.
I just wonder sometimes if guys are that good that he was, that sometimes they get overlooked because they should be doing that. Do you know what I mean? Like rather than so. Absolutely. So I just thought he was phenomenal. Like I looked through the season and I thought he had a good season, and but not like an outstanding wow. But that grand final series, he just showed his class.
Yep, I agree. Give me a nasty.
Come on.
Oh, it's a little nasty here, and it's sponsored by Burger Boss. So it tastes good. It tastes good. But look, I'm just really pleased that the season is over finally. And I don't mean that in the negative way that that sounds, but the one thing I will not be missing is the cheerleading commentary that we have had to put up with all year. It's been a pain in the butt. And the coaching, the amount of coaching, some of these guys that are on the commentary panel, I mean, I don't know why they're not coaching every team in the league. They know they have the answer to everything, every play, every person's, he should have gone left and should have done this. I mean, I'm just so sick of the over-analysis. It drives me crazy. Do these guys ever listen to an NBA game and just sit back and go, oh, how are they doing that? Or understand that you're actually calling the game, not what you think, your opinion constantly. That's not the most pertinent point. Anyway, I'm not going to miss that is all I'm getting at. I'm not going to miss that. Say goodnight, Brad. Say goodnight.
I'm going to say goodnight to everyone, but I also want to let everyone know as well, Boddy and I are going to keep going. There's an Olympic.
Yeah, we don't care.
We're going to each week, we're going to bring back some Where Are They Now. We've got a whole lot of people in store. And please, if you want, we have had some people put out names. They'd love, I'd like to hear this guy or that guy or even that lady, that female, anything like that. So please, let us know. We'd love to do those, and then we'll just update things, what's going on around the league and the Boomers and everything. So we're really looking forward to it. Yeah, buddy?
Yeah, absolutely. Really looking forward to all that we've got coming up, and particularly some of our guests.
Thank you to Piranha Media. You guys are great. Our numbers are brilliant. Thank you to everyone. That's the NBL season without a wrap, but we're going to keep going. Enjoy your week off. I'm stuck in COVID world, but who cares? Because we've got the NBL and NBA on. All the best, buddy. See you next week, mate.
See you, Brett.
I was talking about Dave Barlow, Warrior stretching, everything like that.
Yeah.
Barlow's got 5 rings.
Yeah.
5 rings, mate. He's right up there.
Yeah. Jesse Wagstaff's got 6.